Hello, and thanks for joining the Walt Weekly Podcast Friday Live. My name is Walter Latham. I am your host, and I'm joined by Michelle Sweeney McCombs. And this week's topic, and you heard of that term, American tragedy? Well, this week's topic is healthcare and the African American. You know, why are we left out? And when it comes to American tragedy, this is not in the mix. The greatest American tragedy to me is the lack of health care and how we have suffered, you know, since slavery, since we've been brought to these shores. All right. So before I go any further, yeah, I do want to just say that we do have a guest to help us with this topic tonight, because we want to drill down and try to discuss why this is the case, why we're dying left and right. Why did it take COVID for everybody to stand up and pay attention to, you know, why we have been so mistreated, abused, and due to lack of the proper treatment from the healthcare profession? Okay, so we do have a guest, someone that's up, you know, up close and, you know, up front and center, and she's seen this, and she has the authority to talk about it. And I will be introducing her shortly. But, you know, to go further, in today's America, you know, minority patients, you know, they have a markedly worse health outcome than white patients, right? And the differences are greatest for, you know, Black Americans. Compared to white patients, we are 2 to 3 times likely to die. And some of those illnesses are like cancer, asthma, influenza, pneumonia, diabetes, HIV, AIDS, and homicide. And homicide does, you know, that mistreatment also impacts the homicide rate in our country. Let me introduce our guest before I go any further. And her name is Ma'am, for your info. Okay. Hello, Ma'am. How are you? Are you there?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks okay. for having me.
Oh, it's fantastic. Thank you for joining. Let me give you a little background on Ma'am. All right, she has a Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, and she's a certified emergency room nurse with 16 years of experience. So you couldn't ask for a better witness to what has been and what is going on in our medical care, what's going on with our medical care. Okay. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle to mention our sponsors for this show. And then we're going to go right to our medical professional.
Great. Thank you, Walter. Thank you, everyone. And good evening. Welcome to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. This week's segment, African-Americans and the U.S. healthcare. Thank you to our live audience for joining us on a weekly basis. Please follow The Walt Weekly and share this podcast by clicking the share button below. The Walt Weekly Friday Live is brought to you by Michelle Sweeney Hair and Skincare. Intro and outro music is brought to you by Uncle Nephew. His music can be found on all streaming platforms. To this week's panel members, we have poet and author Judy C. Andrews out of Brooklyn, New York. We also have Christopher Sweeney out of New Jersey, retired sanitation worker and CEO of Johnny Roof's Smokehouse. I will put all of the information in the chat room along with any websites in relation to today's topics. Thank you, everyone. Please follow The Walt Weekly on our Podbean platform, IG, Twitter, Facebook, and all social medias, and our website as well. Thank you for joining us. Back to you, Walter.
All right. Thank you, Michelle. Thanks, everybody, for joining, especially our guest. I want to thank her. All right. And we want to leverage her information and her experiences. And I'm going to turn it over to panel member Chris Sweeney. I want to thank him for bringing in this guest. Because it was very hard. We had this episode on our dashboard for months, and it was very difficult to get someone. So, you know, we really want to thank our guest and try to give her a shout out for coming in.
Yes. Welcome.
And that applies to Chris Sweeney also. So, yes. Chris, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Good evening, folks. How's everybody doing?
We are good, thank you.
Ma'am, I want to start off by asking you. Well, I want to make a statement, and I want to see if you agree with this. Because I think the relationship African-Americans have with the healthcare system is not, you know, something that should be taken lightly or we should dismiss. Because it's understandable the things that have been done to us over time in this country as far as health and experimentation and all kinds of tricks that they pulled on us years ago. And I guess that has been passed down from generation to generation for us not to trust doctors or healthcare professionals. And I think it's a huge mistake. You know, we have a large number of things that are hereditary, that are passed down to us, high blood pressure, heart disease, all kinds of things that we need to be going to doctors to get checked out. And I'm going to speak for myself as an African-American of I'm in my 50s now, and a good portion of my 20s and 30s, I didn't go to the doctor. You know, I thought I was okay. I'm strong. I feel good. And I liken it to a car. Car looks good. It's shiny on the outside, but you don't know how that engine is running. And we all need to go get checked out. And I want to say that I'm a regular visitor to the, I take my regular annual visits to the doctor, colonoscopies, all of these things. It is very important. And I want to ask you, are you seeing an increase in African-American participation in the healthcare system?
I see an increase. Hey, Chris, thanks for that.
How you doing?
So I don't know if it's an increase. I think it's pretty steady in the African-American community coming into the emergency department seeking emergent care. They are not.
Oh, so they're coming in after the fact.
After the fact, they're still coming in after the fact. They okay. are. I think your analogy of a car is excellent. These diseases are insidious and they take a long time to rear their ugly heads. So you're going along thinking you're fine. And something that could have been caught a long time ago, if you had stopped by the doctor's office, is now too late.
And yes, can I ask, do you feel it's warranted, the apprehension?
I respect the apprehension. I understand where it comes from. But I also hear, okay, you can be apprehensive, but how are you going to take care of yourself then? Right? So if you mm-hmm. are apprehensive about coming to the doctor, then you need to take care of yourself. Right? And so that Absolutely. Means eat right, exercise. I mean, those are statements that have been made to everyone. That is not new news, but it is accurate news. That is accurate information. You cannot come to the healthcare professionals and want a pill to fix it all. It doesn't work like that. You have to take responsibility and eat right, exercise, take mm-hmm. care of your mental health. All of that does work. It's not easy, but it works. But yes, they're coming in after the fact. And I think it's definitely fear, right? It's fear driven. They're fearful for going into the doctor's office. They don't want to hear bad news. They don't want to be spoken to like they're imbeciles. All of that. I understand all of that. But if you're afraid of the doctor, are you afraid of other things in your life? You know, like speeding, poor diet, I don't know. I don't know.
It's, yeah, sausage, egg, and biscuit.
Exactly. I don't know.
Yes.
Yes, Lord.
I mean, you know, it is the system is designed to help a certain group of people, and it takes a lot of fight to get through it. But
it's the only system we have, right?
It's the only system we have.
Yeah.
But how do you go about, you know, ma'am, how do you go about combating that and educating our people that they need to go to the doctor? Mm-hmm. Or do you see more of a pushback on the other side of, you know, these people don't have insurance. I don't see why we should be dealing with them, and the mistreatment and abuse from the other side. How do you weigh that, and how do you combat that? You know, how do you remediate that? Because I know you see that. You see the end result when they don't go to the doctor and all of a sudden they pop up, you know, and you got to take care of them.
I don't know how to combat that. I really don't. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I know health insurance is a huge problem. And I think family involvement, communication, education is lacking. It all really starts from home. And if your family is involved in healthcare and taking care of themselves and going to the doctor and proactive, then more than likely most of the family members would be as well. So that's true.
Okay.
I do agree. I think, you know, people don't have health insurance. They don't have access. The access they have, the quality is probably poor. It's just systematic. It's economic. It's healthcare. It's no jobs, no health insurance. You can't leave your job to go to the doctor. You can't. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a lot. There's a lot going on with the health disparities.
I want to share what changed for me as far as me going to the doctor. It was a couple of things. I've lost both my parents to heart attacks and strokes. And that was something that, you know, stayed with me. They were pretty young when they died, both. Mm-hmm. So it's something that stayed with me. And then, you know, I worked on a job where I had an early opportunity to retire. But what really changed for me was having the conversation with other guys that I worked with, something that I never did with my friends or other men. And we started talking about some of the things that we were encountering. And we found that we had similar issues. And then we started sharing healthcare professionals that were catering to us. Mm-hmm. So now I'm having conversations with guys, yo, go to this doctor. They explain everything better. They sit down and talk to you. Those are the things that didn't take place in my community. We don't have those conversations. We don't talk about doctors. Like, we'll talk sports before we recommend a doctor to each other. Now I'm doing that. I'm sharing those experiences. I'm sharing, you know, hey, I got a great doctor. It may not be for you, but you should check him out. Anyway, it could be for you. You know, we have to start communicating. So you're right. It starts at home. It starts in your community. It starts with everyone. And I think for me, that changed my life.
That's interesting. You said that, Chris, that you guys can talk about sports and anything else. What is the problem with speaking about health? Like, why is that something people don't discuss within our community?
In my case,
until you die or something happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my case, you know, it wasn't that we didn't speak about health. I was, you know, a teacher who should have known better. I had a good job. I was making very good money. And you know, as a teacher, I was making, you know, six figures. And I was kept so busy. You know, I was literally working about 18 to 18 to 19 hours a day. And then my weekends were filled with working. That I just got to a point where I said, oh, well, I feel good. I'm tired all the time, but I feel good. And I kind of went into denial. And it wasn't until I retired a year earlier than my retirement date. And I went to the doctor. I was pre-everything. And I know that diabetes and heart disease, as well as obesity, run in my family. I knew the statistics. I was very educated in all of the areas of, medical diversity with the African-American experience and taking care of yourself. But for some reason, I just felt, I'm going to be okay. It's not going to happen to me. You know, I saw what happened to my mother. She was diabetic. She had heart disease. She wasn't obese, but she didn't take care of herself and she was blind. And I knew all of this stuff intellectually, but somewhere along the line, I just did not go to the doctor. And when I did go, thank God I went when I did, because I had to change everything. I had to change the way I was eating, you know, bacon, egg, and cheese on a roll, you know, down the block from the bodega. Right. Dunkin' Donuts, I don't want to mention, well, the fast food restaurants were all in the, I worked in an African-American, predominantly African-American neighborhood in Bed-Stuy. And It was like a food desert. The only places you could go were at the fast food places or the places that sold, you know, the traditional fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, collard greens with, you know, the ham, real ham hocks and, you know, fat back into the greens. And you went there or you had to take the bus all the way to downtown Brooklyn to find, something good to eat. Or you had to bring your own lunch or a breakfast. It got to the point where school was my second home. And I was at my job all day until from like 7 in the morning until about 8 at night. And then when I came home, I still had to do a lesson plan and I still had to work. And, you know, I was grabbing food on the run. So we have food deserts in our community. We also have this code where if you're not working, then you must be lazy. So no one wants to be called lazy. So you just work and work and work and you forget about the fruits, the vegetables, the exercise, the fresh air. It becomes almost like a mantra. So, you know, I think the best thing to do is to assess your life every 6 months, and you should be going for your checkups every single year, at least. And for women, we must go for our mammograms and GYN checkups. We must also go for the colonoscopy, everything that your doctor is trying to help you with. And in some cases, some doctors may be racist and may not tell you and just want the money or the prescription. They're quick to push prescriptions on you. You know, they're quick to say, take this pill, you can do this drug and this will help you. And they actually make it very easy for you to get them. So it's up to you as an individual to take care of yourself first too, for prevention.
And that's I have a question for our medical professional. I was reading a story about a lady that took her son to, he had a broken arm, so took him to the emergency room and the doctor reset. And it was an African-American lady on her son. And they reset it, but they didn't give him painkillers because they have this idea. Now, this is what I was reading, that African-Americans have a higher pain tolerance for pain than white people. Mm. Is that what you've seen or what you know, or that's the way they think?
I don't know if it's they think they have a higher pain threshold than anybody else. I just think it's discrimination. They just don't. And it's not everybody, it's not every doctor, it's not every patient, but I do notice that they're more likely to give certain people pain relief before others, definitely. And I see that with not just pain, but I see that with how they treat pregnant women, psychiatric patients. Like it's, that there's a difference. There's a definite difference. And if the family members don't know to advocate or speak up for themselves, then it's going to continue.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, another thing, now you've been in the field for, actively practicing your profession for more than 15 years, right?
Yes.
Have you seen a markedly different in terms of the diversity? Have you seen more Black doctors and nurses than you've seen, let's say, when you started?
Yes. And I hesitate to say that because I moved from one area of the country to another. One was heavily predominantly Black, and now it's not. So, but where I am now, there is an increase, definitely. There's an increase in upper management as well.
That's good.
Yeah, like CEOs and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's at the administrative level. Yeah, with the CEOs. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, good. All right.
I want to ask, are you finding that they're having these conversations, like, do they have these meetings with upper management and directors of the hospital? Do they sit and have these conversations? Are we in the room when they're having these conversations? Are they really addressing these things? Like, is anybody saying anything?
Yes. And so I think there's a huge push now. I know with my organization, there's a huge department on diversity and inclusion. That's a huge push now. Like there's a diversity and inclusion CEO, and then there's classes and retreats and inclusion. And so, yes, there's a lot of conversation going on about diversity and inclusion. And there's a lot of classes being offered for the healthcare professionals to take to understand diversity, to understand inclusion, and not just Black and white, but gender inclusion. Like, yeah, there's a big push now. It's very slow. It's very slow, but there is a push. These conversations are being had, yes. But,
okay.
I think, I don't know. I think besides the conversation, and yes, the healthcare profession needs to do better.
I know where you want to go. You want to say we need to do better.
We need to do better. We need to do better first. And as Judy was saying, how they're really quick to push a pill on you. I totally agree. But on the flip side, it may seem quick. But if you've come to me at the end and the only thing that's going to work is a pill at this point, it may mm-hmm. seem quick, but I hadn't seen you in 10 years. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been quick. We could have worked out something else. But right now, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't know. Yeah.
Very true. You know, it was a wake up call for me. And since then, that was in 2016. And I have changed considerably. I still cook a lot, but I cook it with a different method. You know, there's a different method of cooking. You know, you don't use a lot of grease and a lot of butter and a lot of fat. You eat more vegetables, more fruit. You exercise, you know, walk, go for a walk, do your workout. And you have to take care of your mental health also. You know, because so many of us are working in jobs that deplete us of self-care. And when you start looking at your self-care, you can actually thrive.
I agree. Totally agree. Totally.
Yeah, Chris, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I just want to say, and this is not an excuse, and we're all talking about eating healthy and eating right, but we also got to recognize it's very expensive to eat right, to eat healthy. And when you have a family of 4 or 5, and you're, especially if you're a single mother or a single father, single parent, period, you're out there, you got to make hard choices because you got to feed your family and you got to make things stretch. And it's disgusting how expensive they make eating well Everything that is bad for you is what you could afford. You know, I don't know if you're finding that healthcare worker.
I'll say. Oh, I certainly am.
No,
I certainly am.
Not just it's eating well either to, when you to, do to, when you try right. to have healthy living with instead of going for medications and you want to do health foods or healthy you know vitamins et cetera, anything that's good for you or health wise is expensive.
Yeah, and anytime you can go to a fast food place and get two double burgers, you know, for like $3, you know there's a problem. Something is wrong there because that's not real. That's not usually the case if you're going to eat healthy, you know. So they've put these restaurants in our communities, and it does make it difficult for a family who's, you know, living just above the poverty line to get a decent meal. I think that education about food and health has to also begin in the school system at a very young age. We have to teach our children to eat healthy, and we have to begin to buy foods that we can afford that are that's healthy. And there are some foods, you know, lettuce, no one wants to eat that, but you can find ways to add fruits and vegetables to your diet without actually being that expensive or spending that much money. There are ways there, you know, when you go, you could go to different stores instead of your neighborhood supermarket, which might not be that great. There are other places you can go to get, you know, really good fresh stuff that is not that expensive.
And I also think, Judy, with that, it's moderation. It's not all the time. It's not every yes. meal. But there has to be some change. You cannot maintain that lifestyle and maintain health. It's just slight changes. It's a car. If you drive to the store, your car is parked a little bit further from the front door. Like small changes like that over time, make it a habit. And that's just something that you end up doing. So it would be, we're going to just have salad on Mondays. Once you get used to that, that's what you have. And you realize it's cheaper than the fast food, and it's filling. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's just, I don't think it's, you have to make a hard left turn, but I think you have to make small changes to impact your health over the long run.
Yes. And the other thing is sugar. Sugar and salt. Those two things alone will kill you. So you have to limit how much sugar you take. You know, when you go to a fast food place in the morning for breakfast and you order coffee, you know, I've watched them. They take a tablespoon and dip it in the sugar. And you might ask for three or four. I've heard people ask for five sugars. That's five tablespoons of sugar that you're having in your coffee or your tea at the beginning of the day. So imagine how much sugar you're going to eat by the end of the day. And the same thing for salt. Be careful how much salt intake you have. Those things actually are bad for the heart, and they add a lot of pounds to you, and they can kill you. You know, we have hypertension, high blood pressure, obesity. I can't believe how many people I know who are suffering from this. And one person I know, you know, had a stroke because she never went to the doctor, and she spent her life doing domestic work and never thought about it until she had a stroke, you know. So I think there are things we can do, and we have to be aware of the types of education that we've gotten about food and nutrition and health, because some of us may never have gotten it. So we need to do some things ourselves to, you know, educate ourselves about the horrors of sugar and salt and what they and other foods that do to our body. What do they do to your body after you've eaten them? And how do you feel after you've eaten, you know, a fast food meal?
But you know what, Judy, I do have this experience, I think, that speaks to what you're saying. All right. But from a different angle, you know, I'm in my 60s. Right. And I play golf. And a lot of times I play with, they put me with guys that I don't know, or I meet guys when I'm practicing. And I got a couple of guys that I practice with or I play with. And both of these guys are in their one is in his late 80s, one is in his 90s. All right, these are white guys now. And I'm asking them, you know, I'm saying to myself, there's no way I'm going to reach that age. But the thing that they had in common, and it wasn't so much diet, it was exercise. Mm-hmm. They went to the gym 3 to 4 times a week. Okay? That's what they had in common. And I think that's something that we have to take into account and take very seriously, that we can't just sit on a damn couch and watch TV. Right. Okay? You want to eat a chicken biscuit or something like that? Go to the gym. Go to the treadmill. Burn it off. All right, you have to exercise. That has to be part of your lifestyle. Exercise has to be part of our lifestyle. I mean, forever.
You can watch it, right? You can watch a lot of it on YouTube. If you, you know, if you're on your phone, you can, you know, set up your phone to do the exercise. You can watch it on YouTube. We'll buy the Apple TV before we, you know, watch
you don't even have to do that.
Before we exercise.
You don't even have to go to the gym. You can just go to the gym. You know, I'm fortunate because I don't have to pay for the gym. But I get in my truck and I go to the gym. I hit the treadmill. I mean, I always lifted weights all my life. I mean, all my adult life. All right. So, but exercise is a key. Now, I want to ask my guest, what does he think about that?
Oh, my.
I know, you know, yeah, you may have some comments on that.
exercise, I agree 100%. Exercise changes lives, changes attitudes, changes mental health. You expose yourself to different people, different ideas, different food strategies. It's not just the physicality of it. It is the exposure to a whole different lifestyle. I completely, completely agree. I agree with Judy with setting up your phone and doing it at home. And I also agree with going to the gym. But if we're going to talk about going to the gym, it can be expensive, right? Some people can't afford the gym. There are other ways that you can exercise. And we're not talking CrossFit. We're not talking Ironman. We're talking a walk around the neighborhood. We're talking a walk around your dining room table. Like, we're talking lifting cans of peas, something to get a push up in your house. Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you.
That's the commonality. Yeah. I mean, you don't even have, you can walk around the block.
Yeah,
I started walking. The Delta, you know, just walk.
Yeah, walking is my favorite exercise. Yep. Yeah, and dance aerobics.
Yeah, those days of sitting on the couch and watching TV and eating ice cream and stuff like that, those days, that's bad. You got to move. As long as we move, that right there can decrease a lot of the ailments that we have.
You know what I find interesting is that with all of the information that we have out there, everybody has a smartphone in their hand. Everybody has access to smart TVs. And you have had to have heard something, you know, eat right, exercise. I think everybody has heard that. And maybe, like Judy said, they're not educated as to what that means, right? What does that look like? But if your family has a history of these chronic diseases and you don't want that, you're going to have to start asking questions, right? You're going to have to educate yourself on how can I do better? I'm sorry. That was a little harsh.
No.
Yeah, no, not at all.
That's truth. Yes.
It's the truth. No. It is the truth. I think it is very frustrating for the healthcare professionals when you come in at the end. And let me give you a story. So I had a young man, nice couple. He came in and he could not understand why he had all of these symptoms. And he had diabetic symptoms. And so the question was, are you a diabetic? Yep. So what have your sugars been? I don't know. Are you taking medicine? And so I just happened to say, okay, so what kind of stuff are you drinking? And he says, you know, Mountain Dew, Sunkist. What?
Oh my God.
What are you doing? So
I know.
I know people who don't drink water at all.
At all. Yeah, Chris, you were telling me that. You were telling me
that. Yeah, I used to be like that. I mean, to be honest, I didn't drink water.
Not a drop of water. They'll tell you I don't drink water. It's insane. I've never heard of that. I don't understand that. You know, and I'm a big guy. I drink a lot of water. I love water. Water is the best thing on the planet. Like, how do people not drink it? I don't drink
soda. And I wonder why they say, I don't like water. Like, what is there to like?
Well, I tell you, I mean,
I
didn't drink water at one time. All right? I didn't like it. It used to choke me. I mean, it was too light. So, I can attest to that. But now, that's all you'll find in my house. And that's for years, for the last 5 to 8 years. You know, I don't drink sodas. I was a Pepsi guy. All right. God bless my mother. She loved
that's
Pepsi.
That's a heart attack but, drink. Oh,
my. I love my Pepsi. Man. Don't get me wrong. But I can't drink it. It's like a drug to me. But anyway, that's, I used to do that, Chris, and I can understand, you know, how people can do that because I used to do it.
Yeah, when I was teaching my last year, I started drinking a gallon of water a day. And we would, as teachers, you know, the science teacher got me involved in that. I was teaching English, but we would all carry around a gallon of water with us all day to hydrate us because we were in rooms that didn't have ventilation. And we survived. It worked, you know. But I continue doing that. I don't do quite a gallon, but I get close to it. And we just have to educate ourselves on nutrition. And you can get that information from your doctor.
You treat your body well, the body will treat you well as well.
That's right.
And there are some things that you can't avoid. You can't avoid genetics.
Right,
that's true.
You cannot
avoid that. You cannot avoid genetics. So sorry if our great-great-great-grandparents have passed down high blood pressure. You just have the gene.
Right.
Right. And so you may end up going to the doctor and lo and behold, you have high blood pressure. You see, I didn't want to go to the doctor anyway, but that was genetics. That's not the doctor. Right. So, okay, doc, my genetics are screwed up. How can I fight it?
Right.
What can I do? Because you can't avoid the genetics. It's all right. It's just what you got. So
that's
now
just what you got.
So now what? Now what? How do
And it's not always. And it's not always a pill or medication. It's changing your diet that can help control these things that are going on with your body. You know, and if you catch it early enough, you may be able to do it without taking medication. I don't take aspirins. I don't even like taking anything. I don't like taking aspirins.
You're lucky.
Nothing. I feel that's like good. If I have a headache, I think my resistance is low, and I'm tired. I go take a nap. I lay down. Now, do I get sick? Occasionally I do, but not as often as other people. I try not to. I don't drink soda. I got a problem with potato chips. I can tell you that right now. That's my weakness. but at the same time, I'm not a crazy drinker. I don't drink like that. I don't take aspirins. They tell you it's good to take those things, and I'm not.
Yeah, I was
them.
Just
I'm
about to mention aspirins when I went to my doctor last week, and right the day before they came out, they're telling people not to take aspirin anymore because my doctor would always say, if you have heart issues or whatever, take an aspirin every day. Now they're saying not to. So. Yeah, you know,
but I don't get
things
upset.
Things change.
But
it's
we shouldn't get upset when they find that you shouldn't take those things because we evolve as a society and and they evolve in the medical profession as well. And they find out things through research over time that, hey, maybe we made a mistake. Remember?
Right. 50 years later.
Right. Remember, they told us to stop using paper bags and they made everybody use plastic bags.
Now you're back to plastic bags.
Exactly. So,
yes. So I guess, in here in our audience, I want to acknowledge one of our audience members in there indicating that they're at the point, they're 60% of what they consume, they grow the 40 comes from local farmers. So I could vouch for myself since COVID, we started our own garden. So what you take in definitely affects you, you know, things are more expensive as well. So if you can grow your own vegetables, Because I think a lot of people are going back into agriculture as well. Things are so high out there. They cannot afford to eat anymore. And you're not getting your money's worth either. You know?
I agree.
Yeah, so I agree with that person.
I had a question for ma'am. I wanted to know, why do you feel that so many African Americans are suffering from these three things, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity? I've never seen this many people in the hospital suffering like this.
We don't eat right. Diet.
I think it's diet. I think it's lack of resources and lack of education, but I also think it's genetics. I think high blood pressure just runs in people's families and they don't.
Do you also feel there's mental illness? I think it's a lot
of that could be it
mental
too.
Illness, undiagnosed stress and trauma, and people are not doing what they need to do. What do you feel?
I agree.
I completely
agree. And I also think that, you know, when you talk about research, you have to research yourself, right? So you have to figure out what does how does the apple make my body feel, right? How does this walk make me feel? If you don't make a correlation with the things that are going in you and making how it makes you feel, you're not going to make the connection to change. Does that make sense? Right. So if you don't understand that this job I'm going to is stressful, is causing me stress, and I'm eating the wrong things, correlate the fact that I'm eating poorly because I'm stressed because of the, like, you have to make a correlation as to what's causing your notice that there's something going on with you. Some people don't even pay attention that this.
Right. That's
like,
true.
They don't even understand, like, they got a swollen foot or.
Definitely. Right. You got to pay attention to your body.
You have to pay attention, attention to yourself. Yeah. But mental health. Yeah. Mental health is a problem too. Yeah. There's a lot of trauma in our community. Definitely. Definitely. And if you don't acknowledge it or don't even know, how do you fix it? Right.
Right.
Can I ask you this question, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to. What are your thoughts on the vaccination, especially when it comes to African Americans?
The COVID vaccination?
Yes, the COVID vaccination. How do you feel? What are your opinions as far as what we should do as a community? Because we're a big part of the people who don't want to get vaxxed, and we have a lot of these underlying conditions that this virus seems to attack.
Exactly. I see the decrease in numbers. I'm on that side, right? So the amount of COVID positive patients that are coming in has decreased because of the higher vaccination rate. People don't believe the news, but I'm telling you that what I see in my facility are unvaccinated sick people. So take that for what you want. And I'm not saying you cannot get COVID and be vaccinated. You absolutely can. That is true. You probably will not come to see me if that's the case, though. You will feel uncomfortable. You will feel sick. You will stay in the bed, but you will recover without having a tube down your throat. So I believe in the vaccine.
No, that's good. I'm glad. That's a good question, Chris.
And you do what it is. I think that if you do not believe in a vaccine for whatever reason, that's your personal decision and your family decision, then you still need to protect yourself. Right. And so you can't be out in the street doing your thing without your mask on and being surrounded by a whole bunch of people. I do not agree with that at all. I think that you should protect yourself and stay home as much as possible, small groups, and definitely wear your mask. You don't have to take the vaccine, but you need to protect yourself because you're not doing anybody any good if you get sick, and we're talking about single parents, I mean, you can't be a single parent and be unvaccinated and continue the same lifestyle. Not a good idea. Not a good idea.
Yes, ma'am. And I'm seeing all these people who are protesting in the street because they don't want to get vaccinated and they don't have any mask on and they're yelling about freedom and civil rights and the Constitution. I wonder what's going to happen by the holiday season.
Well, I think as ma'am said, that you're going to still see a drastic drop in the infection rate due to the people that have, you know, stood up and taken the vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a knock-on effect. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, the vaccination rate's maybe around 65 to 70% now. So, yeah, they're being protected by the people that did take the shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean you won't see people still getting sick.
Oh, no. No.
It just means that you will see less people getting sick.
That's right.
But less the people. Ones that do get sick are going to really be sick.
Yes. And
if they don't have the vaccine. Right.
If they don't have the vaccine. And the push for the vaccine was to decrease the overload of the hospitals. That's pretty much what it is. Like, we don't have the space or the capacity to take care of the amount of people that are sick.
And that brings me to my next question for you. Because not only do we need to go to the doctor more and we need to see people, but and not only do we have a problem with the food and the food deserts, but we have deserts where there aren't any hospitals. You have all these urgent care centers popping up, but those places really can't give good quality care, in my opinion. They're quick stops for small things, but when you have hospital closings and you just have one hospital servicing 4 and 5 communities, it creates a problem. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's going to be hard for me to answer. Fortunately, I am in a saturated area. So I don't really have much to say on that one. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I
kind of understand that that's more of a policy type thing, more governmental.
But it wasn't it was more evident in COVID, especially in New York City. These places were overrun and they couldn't handle the number of people coming in. And if you look in, I'll just take Brooklyn. You had so many hospitals that closed in Brooklyn over the last 10 years. It is insane. And it's no way these places can handle a pandemic like this.
No.
And it was evident.
I agree with you, Chris. COVID. But yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, I think there's more that, you know, when our representatives run for office, like you got Eric Adams, I mean, I think these type of questions should be addressed to him. And say, look, you know, Brooklyn used to have St. Mary's Hospital. There's no hospital there now. You know, we got X amount, in terms of a ratio, we got X amount of people to this hospital or to these hospitals. So what are you going to do about that? Why isn't that not a question that he was asked, or why is that not part of his platform? I think that's where that should be addressed.
Yeah, and many of the hospitals are merging and becoming conglomerates. You know, you know, that have 3 hospitals in one now. You know, New York Presbyterian, Methodist Hospital, and there's one more hospital, you know, involved in coming together with that hospital. So you have care centers, urgent care centers, and you have clinics, and then you have community hospitals, and they're not adept at handling a pandemic.
All right. I do want to circle back, though. You know, I don't want to jump, but I do want to snap back onto one thing. You know, the title of this show is Healthcare and the African Americans. Why are we left out? Now, that question, why are we left out? Are we really being left out? Or is it a lack of participation and mindfulness on our side? Are we at fault? Who can address that?
I think it's both.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Fault on both sides.
Okay.
100% both. I worked at a place where I had excellent health care, and I could tell you not everybody there used it.
Yeah.
It's not just people who don't have access to the healthcare system, who don't have benefits. There's a lot of people that have benefits and don't use them at all.
I totally agree.
I was one of them. My husband was one of them. I confess.
I go to the doctor. My toe was hurting. I'm going to the doctor, you know.
Yeah. So. And the other thing is that with teachers, when you had to go or be absent and you had to go to the doctor, you were written up for it. It was sort of like, you know, you're absent. They didn't care if you had to go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
They still don't. They don't care. You get 3 days to go, and that's it for the year. And then you start taking your sick days.
Mm-hmm. I say to that, Judy, let them take my days. I'm still going to check my health. You have to find out what is more important to you.
Yeah, what's your
losing a day's what's your priority? Right. Losing a day's pay or losing your life?
Exactly. That's why I retired early. I lost 2 years of salary, but you know, I am happier than I've ever been, and I'm healthier than I've ever been in my life.
You know what's
and it was worth it.
You know what I find very interesting.
Yeah, let me just
go ahead, Walt.
Yeah, no problem. No, I just want to add one thing, though, and I think this is very important that we leave our listeners with this. If you're an entrepreneur, if you're going for whatever career path that you're going down, all right, and I'm speaking to our younger generation, if you don't have health, if you're not healthy, then your goals and your dreams are insurmountable or unobtainable. That's health is number one. That's number one. You have to be healthy. Number one.
Right.
Okay. I do want to leave you with that because that's my final word on it, because that is the most important thing. And take it from me, I'm in my mid-60s, so I know, and I've seen a lot, guys. You don't have health. I mean, all that other stuff is just irrelevant because you can't participate. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I got to say about it, and I'm gonna turn it over to our guest and have some words from her and from the panel, and then we're gonna end this show.
I agree, Walt.
thank you very much. All right. So, yeah, and Judy, you have anything?
I just think that you must get in touch with who you are, and understand and educate yourself about your mental health, your family's health, what diseases or illnesses are in your family, how will they affect you. You must get your physical exam every single year. You must not let a job keep you from doing that. And don't be a money chaser. Be a passion chaser for what you want in your life. Money will not get you a healthy life.
We got to have that paper, but go ahead. Okay. Yeah, Chris.
Hey, man, that was good. That was good. I'm going to speak real quick. Get your physicals done. Eat right. Eat healthy. You know, I'm on that healthy trek now, thanks to my brother, the chef, who's shown me how to eat a lot of healthy foods. And I'm growing a garden. But first and foremost, get checked out. Get your yearly exams. Do not sleep on your health, even if you're not feeling bad. Just get checked out.
Chris, you have anything?
Well, for me, I want to speak directly to the men, especially the African-American men. I'm learning in these years now to be a little bit more vulnerable and to show that and have conversations, talk to each other, express what's going on. You're not alone in your journey and your fight. And if you start having those conversations, I think a lot of things can get fixed. A lot of mental illness, a lot of unawareness, a lot of fear will be taken away if you just have conversations with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. This show will be rebroadcast on Sunday, and it can be streamed on all your major podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your podcast. It'll be rebroadcast on Sunday after 3 p.m. Okay, so please let your people know. All right, and if you want to listen again, it will be out this Sunday. And I'm going to turn it over to Michelle. Michelle?
Yes, yes. Thank you, Walter. And thank you to our panel members, Judy Andrews and Christopher Sweeney, and our live audience for being active in our chat room. Make sure you follow The Walt Weekly. You can find us at thewaltweekly.com, IG and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly, Podbean, Walt Weekly, iTunes, Spotify Radio, iHeartRadio, and other streaming platforms. We like to really, we appreciate our special guest, ma'am, for coming in. We appreciate all your knowledge on the healthcare system, and we appreciate all the advice our panel members and our hosts has had today for our live audience. We look forward to seeing everyone next week, Friday. Please join us. Yes, thank you. Thank you. And make sure you follow
us. Thank you for your service, ma'am. Thank you for your service.
Yes, that's what I was trying to get there. Thank you for your service, ma'am.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. I'm so proud of you. Keep saving lives.
Thank you. Saving lives. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. And we look forward to seeing you in the future again, hopefully, on the Walt Weekly.
Thank you.
Thank you, audience. Please join us.
Everybody have a great weekend, and thanks for joining.
Okay, good night. Right,
thank you.
Thank you, Walter. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Bye-bye.
Night.